Kia ora koutou, nau mai, haere mai, ki Kika. It's Auckland's comprehensive art show brought to you every Sunday night here at Planet FM 104.6 or live stream planetaudio.org.nz. Call Richard Green, tenor, your host for the next 90 minutes with an amazing array of guests in our studio from two different genres, which is really nice to have. It's good to be in the driver's seat again. George is still away working on various bandy stuff around the world, having a great time, I'm sure. I hope you all had a great Sunday. It was a fantastic day today in the sunshine for 10 minutes. You know, well, we've got to say Auckland weather. Crowded House wrote that song, Four Seasons in One Day, inspired by Auckland weather, which is it's fantastic, really. I really enjoyed it. Got a lot of washing, wet and then dry and then wet and then dry and then wet and then dry. Didn't have to wash the car. Got washed three or four times and didn't have to go for a swim because I just stood outside. Wow, what a day. What a weird day. Well, oh, enough about my sunny, nearly summer. It feels like summer, though, doesn't it? Now.
Yeah, humid.
Do you think?
Close enough, yeah.
It's muggy, eh? Really muggy.
Yeah, it was real sticky like this morning.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. Sunday morning stickiness. I'm going to move on from that. And that was the voice of Matt. And also Matt. We've got two Matts. Now, how are we going to define this? I'm going to call one of you Matthew.
Call him Matto.
Matto.
No, don't do that.
Okay, call me Matto.
Matto. So we've got Matto and Matto and Matt, the guitarist and bassist from the band Silvera. Silvera, is that how you say it?
Yeah.
And you were in the Smoke-Free Rock Quest.
Yeah.
And you were third?
Yeah. Became third at National Finals.
Amazing. Third at National Finals?
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. That's pretty impressive. Were you pleased by that?
Yeah,
it was relatively
good fun up on that stage for
it
sure.
It was real fun.
I understand you were the only metal band.
Yeah,
for sure.
Is metal not a popular genre anymore?
It's quite underground and it sort of always has been, and that's where it should stay.
It also kind of depends on where you are as well.
Yeah.
Like there are some places where metal just isn't that in the forefront of people's minds.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, Matto, you look like a metaller with your long golden locks.
Yeah.
And a bit of a princess as well. You know, sure. That's good. Matt, not so much. You're looking a bit kind of...
No, I have to keep my hair short for school.
Oh, right. You have to. Yeah. But you've left. You dropped out of school now.
Well, no, I'm in my last year now.
Yeah, last year. Yeah. Well, you're not anymore, are you? Because you've finished. Have you done your last exam?
Yeah, I've done my last exam, but we've got to go back for three more days.
To do what?
To do, like, prize giving and sort out some other stuff.
Oh, no. I remember the days of exams and exams. That was it. You're gone. Woo!
Well, because I do Cambridge, I had my last exam on the 14th of November.
You do Cambridge?
Yeah.
That's a bit posh. Why? Can I ask why you just decided to do Cambridge?
Well, because...
You obviously don't want to be a musician when you grow up.
Well, the school I'm at does Cambridge,
right,
like, most of the time, so...
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, you decided to... What subject are you doing?
I do accounting, history, maths and English.
No music?
No.
Oh, okay, interesting. Do you get the option of studying music?
You did, but the time where I could have chosen to do it was like sort of when I was at the start of high school, and it just wasn't a subject. Like, as a subject, it just didn't really interest me that much.
Oh, fair enough. All that theory, eh?
Yeah.
But, sorry, maths, what? Yeah. History?
Maths, history, accounting and English. I don't know why I did accounting.
I think it's incredibly insensible because, you know what, when you are a musician and you're getting started and going off and things, you can learn how to do your GST, you can run the books, you can make sure producers don't rip you off. I think accounting is a really... I'm a big advocate, actually, for drama schools teaching, just not drama schools, but any creative learning institution for dancers, actors, directors, teaching them how to... run a business, because actually you're your own business at the end of the day, aren't you?
Yeah, for sure.
You're going to be your own business.
Got to treat it like a business, otherwise you don't take yourself seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. And no one else will either, and then they'll end up ripping you off.
Yeah.
Good, accounting, good choice. I did accounting too. Yeah. and you've left school as well? You're allowed to say what school you were at?
Linfield.
Linfield College?
I'm pretty sure I'm allowed.
Yeah. Were you... no, you are allowed. I'll give you permission. Did you... And you've left? You're leaving to go and study audio engineering?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's the...
SAE.
Yeah?
In Parnell.
Oh. So that's a two-year... One-year?
It's a one-year course for the diploma, and then it's another 2 years if I go and do the bachelor.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll
the TV show, The Bachelor. Are you going to be on that?
yeah, that'd be pretty solid. Yeah.
And Maddo's on The Bachelor. That'd be good. I'm looking forward to seeing that. We'll come back to you about your song and introduce our other two guests. We've got Alexandra and Rebecca in the studio from the Embers Collective. That's a hot number. And you're the director and producer, Alexandra's the director, Rebecca's the producer, of My Name is Rachel Carey, which is
Corey.
Which is a... didn't have your mic on, Alexandra.
Oh.
I thought you were quiet earlier.
I'm very quiet.
You were very quiet. Which is a on at the Garnet Station Tiny Theatre and the Pump House Theatre as well.
That's so right.
You're touring.
We are.
I hope you've all got your passports in line to go over the bridge, I tell you.
Absolutely.
I went over the bridge on the bus the other day to pick up something.
Uh-huh.
I took three buses from Point Shiv to Wairau Park, and it was so much fun because I didn't have to drive on the motorway. Shout out to Auckland Transport. Pump House and so they're quite different venues, aren't you? The tiny theatre is like how many seats?
Tiny, 20, about 25, 30 seats at the Tiny Theatre. Lovely little space, very intimate.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we're actually in the Coal Bunker, which is a room just behind the main big Pump House Theatre, if you've ever been there. And it's just a really lovely, both really intimate venues. Mm. The show itself is it really suits the feeling of the show, which is a very intimate kind of a show. So that was our reasoning behind choosing those spaces. We wanted a show that could easily tour, and that was one of the main visions behind putting the show together, is a piece that can pack up easily, unpack easily, fit in any venue, with the view of it being remounted in the future.
And I'm aware of this show because it was done, I don't know how many years ago, at the Court or the Fortune.
Yes, there was a show maybe 7 or 8 years ago, and it did actually tour around New Zealand to various different locations. Yeah, yeah. Mm.
And it's a powerful piece because it's about it's a true story about a young woman who was 23 who got run over by a bulldozer in Palestine, protesting over the destruction of Palestinian houses by the Israeli Defence Force.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Yeah. And she was English or American?
She was American. A young peace activist from Washington, no cultural connections particularly to that particular part of the world, and but just through her university learning, she became very active in human rights issues, and fighting for human rights. And she decided to go over and fight for the rights of Palestinians, but in a peaceful way. So mostly, what she did was stay in Palestinian homes in the Gaza Strip to try to prevent the Israeli military from bulldozing those people's family homes. Yeah, really extraordinary story.
And there was also, I know Alan Rickman directed the first production.
That's correct, yeah.
And that was cancelled when it went, was it Broadway or somewhere?
Yes, they did a very successful season at the Royal Court in London, and then they wanted to take it to the States, and it was going to be put on in a theatre in New York, and then there was a big kerfuffle, and that season ended up being cancelled, but a few months later it was put on in another theatre in New York and did very well. Yeah,
I think they consulted with a group of a Jewish society or something there who were really upset about it being put on. I think there was a lot of pressure because the theatre community in New York is very, lots of producers from the Jewish community, so I think it caused quite a lot of upset around that. So it's still a very controversial.
It is. I think for those, it's like that situation. If you read the play or see the play, you realise that it's absolutely categorically not anti-Semitic.
Yep.
But if you haven't really read the play, it's just one of those things with I think people making their minds up before they actually have really read the play and been able to see for themselves
It's not anti-Semitic, is it? But it actually does talk about the way that Israel is treating the Palestinians, which is different. That's the state of Israel as opposed to Judaism.
Yeah.
I think that's the separation that people need to recognise.
That's correct. Mm. It is absolutely a very provocative issue with a lot of people very you know, it stirs up a lot of emotion because there's so much history and so much bloodshed, and so it is provocative in that way. But I think very much knowing that this piece is about one young woman's journey to try to work out how to do good in the world, and this is the way she sought to do it. And it's all in her words. It's what's called a verbatim piece of theatre. So it's collated from her journal entries and her emails to her mum and dad. So it's very, very personal and very much from her perspective, with that intention that if we go right down into the microcosm of one person's experience, you know, a story of their life told through their words, then we can make up our own minds about our own perspective and our own response to the situation she finds herself in and the issues that she finds herself embroiled in. So, you know, I am... for me, I'm very passionate about this piece because I think it speaks to that part of us that is trying to do good in the world and trying to work out how. And here's a young woman who made a very big decision to go to a war zone across the world and do what she thought was right, and found herself in a very complex situation with a lot of complex history and complex politics and so forth. So I don't think this play shies away from the complexity of the situation, and it certainly doesn't try and simplify it by casting anyone as good and bad. It just creates it just tells the story of a young woman in her own words. And a young woman, very intelligent, creative, funny, sassy young woman who was killed in her prime, at the age of 23. And it's interesting because she's about my age. She would have been about my age because I'm in my early 40s now. So that's interesting to me as well, I think, directing this piece of theatre, that this was all happening when I was in my early 20s. And so there's this kind of echo for me of what she would have done with the rest, you know, with the next 20 years of her life if she hadn't stood in front of that bulldozer. Because what she did was she stood in front of a bulldozer that was coming towards a Palestinian home, and she was trying to peacefully protest and stop the bulldozer from bulldozing that family home, and the bulldozer didn't stop.
Just kept going to the home with her in front. Yeah, tragic.
Very tragic.
Yeah, I looked at the date. I looked at her. She was born in 79.
Yeah.
Same year my partner was born, and I thought, wow, gosh, you know, you think about what someone achieves in that time.
Yeah.
And you go, that's a lot of stuff that someone like that could have contributed to the world had they not been taken so early.
Absolutely.
Why did you choose the play?
I think for that very reason, that it's... the writing is just gorgeous. She's a bloody... Oh, you said
it was okay to swear.
You're not supposed to say that on air, though, Alice. She's going, hey, you said it's all right to swear, aren't you? What I said was, it's okay in context. Did that seem to be context? Let's just move on, shall we?
It's not really a swearing show.
She's just a great writer. The writing's funny, it's quirky, it's sassy. She has a really poetic and engaging writing voice. So straight up, it's just a great play. The stories are great, the scenarios are fantastic, the way she sees the world is so astute, and so, you know, so the play itself is just a gorgeous piece to work on, and a wonderful challenge for me as a director working on a one-woman show. This is the first one-woman show I've directed, so, and working with Phoebe Borick, the actor, is just gorgeous. Like, she just
She's amazing.
Such a great time in the rehearsal room. So that's just in and of itself, as an artist, it's just a beautiful piece to work on. But I also really resonate with the theme of, as I said before, trying to do good in the world and trying to work out how to do that in our world, where it can feel like people don't care and that nobody quite knows how to do that. And I just think her journey is so fascinating, and it makes us think about what we can do and who, you know, how we do treat each other as humans, and what we're responsible for, and what, you know, and the ripple effect of the choices that we make, where, you know, how it's so easy to be sort of unconsciously naive, or unconsciously bigoted, or unconsciously, you know,
ignorant,
absolutely, you know, and then in fact the choices that our government are making, the choices that, you know, our consumer choices, all of these things have a ripple effect, and they affect people all over the globe. It's not like, you know, it's not like we live in our little isolated bubble. We everything we do has an effect, and I think, you know, I'm very lucky to be in a position of privilege here where I can choose not to see some of the suffering that goes on around me, and yet, and many are in that position. But this play encourages that deeper thinking and that reflective thinking, which I think is so healthy. It's really it generates dialogue, which I think is the most extraordinary thing. It creates an opportunity to think and talk about these issues and to have an argument, you know, and to go, but I think she should have done that and did, well, should she even have been there? And but just by being in the space of dialogue, we can start to open our hearts a little more and our minds a little more.
And just picking up on what you said earlier about everything we do has an impact. I remember at this very time that she was killed, an MP in our parliament, Nandor Tanchos, who was a Green MP, he said his big thing was that everything you do is political. You know, what you buy, what you say, you know, those sorts of things. Would you guys agree with that? Is your music political? Are you kind of, or you just sing for fun?
Not directly. It's kind of just a bit of fun for all of us.
Yeah.
I think there are some things where you can introduce politics and some things where it's probably best to leave politics out of it. And, like, some aspects of music, you know, they draw from political, you know, conflict. Like, you know, say, for example, like the punk movement in the late 70s, a lot of that was heavily political stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas, like, some music, you know, you just sort of write what you feel like, I suppose.
I saw someone sent me a link. I haven't actually watched it yet. That Macklemore's released yet another song. He's quite heavily politically motivated with his music. What does motivate you to write a song? We're going to listen to one of your songs shortly. What do you guys write the songs?
Yeah,
do you write them as a group, or is there one lead? Or
usually I'll write like a riff or an idea, and then we take it to the band room. We make a demo, and then we get our singer to write lyrics over it, and then it becomes a song.
Yeah. Okay. So the music comes first, the lyrics follow.
Yeah.
Wow. I always thought it was the other way around.
It depends what genre, because some genres are heavily based on the lyrics, whereas metal is quite commonly known for its heavy riffs and stuff, so you'll focus on the music, and then, like, quite often a vocalist will have a lot of lyrics written down, you know, they'll have their books full of lyrics, and then they'll just come in, they'll see what fits.
Okay.
And then you change it around and make it fit with the song and stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
So who's your lyricist?
Louis Campbell.
So there's five of you in the band.
Yes.
So there's two of you.
Yeah.
There are two Matts. Matt and Matto.
There's also two Louis.
No. And who's the other one?
Living guitarist.
Sorry?
So there's Louis Campbell, the lead singer, Louis Simpson, the other guitarist, and then a drummer's called Tane.
Tane the drummer.
Yeah.
One of these things is not like the other. I reckon you could have called your band Matt Louis Tane.
Originally it was just three of us, so it was just Matt Owen.
No, Owen left because he felt left out?
His family moved to the States.
Yeah, because he's like one of the best guitarists, so
he's insane.
Basically he's got a guaranteed scholarship in the States for music.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can you get a scholarship to universities just for your guitar playing?
Yeah.
Yeah, when you're on his level.
When you're as good as him, you can.
Yeah. So how did he study it at school, or did he pick it up? Or
he just picked everything up by ear. He just had a really amazing ear, and he'd listen to songs, and he'd just go, oh, wait, I recognise that sound. I just learnt one of the hardest songs out there today. He was incredible.
Do you learn by reading notes? Are you note readers, or are you just by ear?
Can't read sheet music. That's why I'm the bass player.
Okay. So what, explain that. The bass player doesn't have to read sheet music. You just think about the rhythm and the...
I know, I was just making a joke.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I missed the joke. Okay.
Typical bass.
Bass players are often the butt of the joke in the musical world.
Right. Okay. Is that because you've only got four strings and not six or 12?
Yeah.
But the bass, I mean, bass players are reasonable people, aren't they, really?
Yeah.
Depends on who the bassist is.
In reality, the drummer and the bassist are the two most important members of the band, so if you have a really bad drummer and a really bad bassist that don't lock in, your band
kind of falls apart.
Yeah, even if you've got, like, the best guitarist in the world, you need a good drummer and bassist.
Is that because they keep the band together, like with the rhythm?
Because they build a foundation.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are the sort of the foundation of what you actually groove to, what you feel, and then sort of the vocals and like the guitars, we're just there to do all the shit on top to make it sound fancy.
The emotional stuff.
Yeah, we don't have any structure with the song, to be honest.
Yeah. Unless it's jazz, because bass and drums, jazz drumming doesn't have much structure. That's a wild...
They lock in quite heavily still. I've had a bit of a background with jazz, so I used to play in jazz bands at school.
Nice.
And sort of with jazz, everyone, they're doing their own thing, but it's sort of organized chaos. And like... Yeah, it's hard to explain, but you know, the bassist tends to have like a walking bass line, and they're playing heavily on all the crotchets and all semi quavers, and the drummer just, you know, they do some cool stuff. And
yeah, some of them amazingly rhythmical and fast as well. Drummers, say those jazz drummers.
They're incredible.
So, what do you have? I was joking before about you wanting to be an accountant. Do you have a plan to be a musician? Is that where you're heading? Or do you want to get a real job?
What's a real job?
Man of times you hear that, eh? Me working in the art, people going, have you got a real job as well?
I like to call it my compromise job.
Your compromise job? Yeah. Why is that?
Just because, like, I need to compromise to pay rent, but, like, I still want, like, my heart's in the arts, you know?
Yeah. My heart's in the arts. There's a bumper sticker right there. My heart's in the arts.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because there was a guy from an old punk band called The Members called J.C. Carroll. He said something which was quite funny, where to be a successful musician, you need one thing, and that's a girlfriend that has a job.
I reckon in the arts, you just need to have a partner who's got a real job. That works quite well. Unless, of course, you both work in the arts and then you're stuffed.
Really. Yep.
You need family who are, you know, accountants and lawyers.
Shout out to my mum.
Yeah. Well, you guys are still at school. There's an expectation you're still going to get fed.
Yeah. At the moment.
Unless you do anything really bad. Are you off to university?
Next year, yes.
To do what?
Accounting. Sorry.
Oh, burn.
No, I've applied for a law and global studies conjoint at Auckland Uni.
Wow.
Awesome.
So you'll be an international lawyer. That'll also be handy with the accounting.
Saves legal fees.
Yeah, well, it's a sign. Not only will we be able to work out whether it's a good financial deal, you'll be able to go, well, I'm not sure about this. Clause 4.7 leaves us a bit open. Oh, wow. So what global law?
Global studies, it's just...
The world.
It focuses quite heavily on like international relations and global politics. Well, and
it's like
business between
links in with the show
like
that we're doing.
It does. I was just going to say,
hand this flyer over to you right now.
Yeah. Are you aware of the situation in Palestine and Israel?
Bit by bit, but not intently. No,
you will be if you're doing global studies. It's quite it dominates the it has for
years,
80 years or something.
And recently, with what? You know, what the President of the United States has been doing over there and what's been happening with Lorde. So actually there's a great intersection between the music industry and what's going on in Israel, Palestine.
You're aware that Lorde pulled out of that concert in Israel?
Yeah.
Yeah, because of the pressure, international pressure on the situation. So,
so there is intersection between, you know, all of your interests.
I suppose, and this comes back to this thing, is art and politics, you know, how important is art and politics?
Yeah.
And it does feature quite a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
If you think about going right back to Shakespeare, who wrote plays that were very political about, you know, reflecting the things at the time. So
I don't think there's any way. I think art will always reflect the time. It will always reflect the politics of the person and the people who are making it. Like, even if you're like, I'm not trying to be overtly political, I mean, we are always embedded in a cultural and political context, even if it's sort of invisible to us. It will always come through the work.
Or someone will find something.
Well,
in
indeed.
Your work, even if you don't mean...
Well, your audience will also respond, for sure.
I remember studying Roger McGough, who was a poet, in year 11 English, and he wrote about Flanders Fields. And he was interviewed, he was a 60s poet, and he was interviewed about the hidden meaning behind his work. And he said, well, there's no hidden meaning, it just actually is what it is. Mm. You know, it's, the words are exactly what they are. There's no metaphor or anything. It's just war's a bloody shit, basically. So, you know, that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we can search, can't we? I mean, I think things like Shakespeare's been academicalised, which is a word I made up, over the years, where Shakespeare's to be performed, not to be read and studied and picked apart. So,
yeah.
But every person who picks up that play, you know, every actor, you know, every different actor that plays that role will bring their own self to that
Absolutely.
Thing. So it will always evolve, which is why I think Shakespeare gets done and done and done, because it's always new, it's always fresh because of the people doing it, which is why it's so wonderful.
And then you get into method acting, don't you? Where method acting is where you actually are the person, you live the experience, don't you? Actually, you know, like Dustin Hoffman in the Marathon Man. There's a famous story, and you know that story with him and Laurence Olivier? You probably won't. Do you know who Laurence Olivier is, boys? Do you know who Dustin Hoffman is?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's good. One out of two, not bad. Laurence Olivier died quite a while ago, so that's okay. He was a famous, very, very famous English actor, and Lord Laurence Olivier, Sir Laurence Olivier, and they were doing a movie called The Marathon Man, which is an excellent movie about an old Nazi, basically. Well, I'll leave it at that just in case you decide to watch it. And Dustin Hoffman's character had to be sleep-deprived. 3 days he was sleep-deprived. So Dustin Hoffman turned up on set, and Laurence Olivier said to him, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't know the exact quote because I wasn't there, but, you know, I've read this a few times and I'm trying to remember the exact words, but he said, "Dustin, my boy, you look terrible." And he said, "Well, I haven't slept for 3 days because we're about to do the scene." And Laurence Olivier said, "My dear boy, have you ever heard of acting?" Because Laurence Olivier came from the other side of it, of the tracks, where you acted a role and then you left it behind. You didn't immerse yourself in it. So, yes. What style do you come from, Rebecca? Do you have a favourite? Are you do you have a style of act? Because you act as well.
I do, yes. I don't know if I have a particular style. I kind of like to kind of find my characters within the text and then kind of work physically with the text first, and then kind of find character from that, what I find, like, exploring on the floor and stuff. I trained here at Unitech with Alex, and I just graduated, so I'm still kind of finding, like, my kind of vibe, style. I guess. Yeah.
We're not actually here at Unitech. We're not part of Unitech.
Shameless
plug for Unitech right there.
Yeah.
No, we're right next to it.
Tim. We are Planet FM, part of the Community Radio Network. We just hire the building, so yeah.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah, sorry. But it's a nice building, though.
It is beautiful.
And it's so convenient for me. It's just up the road, so there you go.
Nice.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you've just graduated this year?
I would have... Well, my graduation was in April, but like I finished at the end, this time last year.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so how does that... You spend 3 months in limbo. You haven't quite graduated yet.
Yeah, but I have the piece of paper that says I've got a degree, so that's...
Wow, is it helping you?
The paper's not, but the learning I got, yes.
Yeah?
Yeah,
so absolutely. How are you... Since you've left there... Mm-hmm. Listen up, boys, here's what's going to happen. Once you've left school, what happened? What's happened? Have you got work? Have you managed to find work in the creative arts?
I make my own work a lot of the time because I refuse to sit around and wait for opportunities to fall in my lap.
Mm-hmm.
So,
been working constantly.
I have been working constantly. Wow. Embers Collective is a theatre company that I started with my friend Ashley Hook, who also went to Unitech with me. And we had our premiere show earlier in the year called Tampocalypse. And... we've been developing more shows under that company name, and then when Alex asked me to produce, my name is Rachel Corey for her, I asked if we could put my company name on top, just so, you know, get a little bit more oomph underneath it. But yeah, I've done other things. I've shot a couple of feature films, done a TV ad.
Shot a couple of feature films on TV ad.
Nationwide tour of a show.
Nationwide tour of a solo show.
So I've just been... quiet.
Yeah, quiet year,
one year, just FYI, this was, you know, she's done quite a lot.
Well, that's actually, as a new graduate, that's quite a lot of work to knock it out.
Yeah.
So the feature films, were they overseas films, New Zealand films?
No, they're just small little indie New Zealand films, and really
Did you hear how you just played them down? We do that in New Zealand, don't we? Small little New Zealand indie films.
Yeah.
They're great. New they Zealand indie films.
Great New Zealand, two great New Zealand indie films. It's they're quite exciting, actually. One of them was about time travel, which was quite cool. And the other one was about space travel.
Oh, there's a theme developing in your career.
Mm. Yes, maybe that'll be like my film career is always Star Trek. Sci-fi.
Oh, gosh. Not a fan of sci-fi.
Really?
Oh, really? We just bonded over Doctor Who.
So Doctor Who, yeah, I kind of like, he's just cool, or she's just cool.
Well, that's right.
So, you know.
I'm pretty excited with a new Doctor.
Yeah, gosh.
I was crying with happiness. I was like, Mum, look, it's a new Doctor. It's a new, she was like,
that's a woman. Yeah. What will we expect? Our Prime Minister is going to be a woman. Sheesh, come on. It's never going to happen. Next year we wanted to have a baby in Parliament.
Oh, wow.
That'd be unusual, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. No, I think it was great. When the amount of kerfuffle that came out when when they cast, what was her name as Doctor Who?
Jodie Whittaker.
Jodie Whittaker. And, you know, like her last name is the name of a chocolate brand. I mean, you just can't get
the
a
best.
Better...
You can't go wrong.
No, like, it's just written in the stars, really, isn't it?
I'm just struggling to connect the two. Actually, I am.
Chocolate and Doctor Who, two of my favourite things.
Oh, okay.
Whittaker specifically. That's a
connection. Whittaker specifically, eh?
So good.
Great New Zealand chocolate. Mm. What's your favourite?
To be honest, my favourite would actually have to be Lewis Road, the chocolate milk, yeah.
Okay, with Whittaker's, yeah.
It's so good.
Do you eat Whittaker's chocolate?
On occasion, but not a lot. No. Not enough to have a favourite.
Okay.
I really like the kind of hokey pokey type, right? You know, the little honeycomb crunchy stuff. Mm.
Like a bit of the dark peppermint myself.
Oh, that's good too.
Mm. So I am addicted to dark salted caramel.
Oh, yes,
very
nice.
That's
the best.
That is my treat. Mm. That is my treat.
And certainly, you know, late at night when you're, you know, rehearsing a show or getting a show into the theatre, and you like chocolate is a necessary factor in this. Maybe here as you're doing your radio show, you need the chocolate.
Now, you know what? We had a lovely guest last week. I'm just shouting out to all our guests who are all lovely, but one particularly one last week who actually, the week before, Rob Frost, who wrote a book on the Mount Cook, Aoraki, a guidebook. He brought chocolate in for everybody to eat during the show.
Lovely.
That was lovely. Just remember that next time people come in. But the dark salted caramel will get me every time. Now this song, we're going to listen to the song. It's called SFRQ.
No, it's called Primitive. That's just the file name.
Oh, okay. Don't know, I feel like a dick.
Nah, it's all good. Don't worry about it.
Richard read out the file name of the song. You guys could have just gone, yeah, that's what it's called.
SFRQ _Silvera_mix_1.3.wav.
Yeah.
Guaranteed single rotten.
It's a really down-to-earth kind of name.
Hell yeah.
So, Silvera.
Yeah.
I googled you guys, and you know there's a Danish band called Silvera?
There's a
Danish heavy metal band.
It's a French band, Gojira.
That's one of their songs.
It's one of their songs.
It's Silvera.
It's a song by a French band.
And the band's called?
Gojira,
which is Japanese for Godzilla.
Oh, wow.
That's cool.
That's awesome. So where'd your name come from?
It came from Gojira.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like sort of like an homage to them, because our like first singer that we had in the band, he was a big fan, and then none of us really listened to Gojira but him at the time, so we named the band after Gojira, because he loved them. And then later on I got into it and I was like, oh wait, that's one of their songs.
Best thing to come out of France is Gojira.
Oh, for sure. Definitely.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Also,
am I listening? They are,
they are,
cheese, good they cheese.
Croissants.
True.
Oh, no. I was in Europe recently, and my wife and my daughter, all they ate was croissant, cheese, and salami. And I was like, I just want to have a vegetable. Can you find me a carrot somewhere? So my closest thing to vegetable, though, was wine. So, yeah, best thing out of France. There's quite a few good things out of France. Not the French.
This Matto here is a pom, so
okay.
He might agree with you.
Yeah. Oh, I think the French are lovely.
You lost some listeners there, though, just simultaneously turned off.
The
French community in Auckland are an outrage.
There'll be protests. It was a joke, okay, really? Gosh, you know, watch the Monty Python. I've lost my train of thought. Now we're going to listen to your song, aren't we? How'd this come about? But this is your entry in the rock and Smoke Free Rock Quiz, wasn't it?
So when we did the finals, we went in and we got to produce a song, and just do a re-recording, because we bought out an EP earlier this year.
Cool.
And then this was like the song that we weren't quite happy with, that we knew we could have done better, so we're like, let's go do it again. And then it turned out real well.
Is your EP online?
Yeah, it's on Spotify, iTunes, Apple, all that stuff. Yeah.
So, SoundCloud?
It's not on SoundCloud, but this song's on SoundCloud.
I'm just thinking we might be able to get two songs in tonight.
Possibly.
Song on your EP as well. Okay. So, well, let's listen to this. So, how heavy are you? I don't mean like 65 kgs or anything like that. I mean like the music, is it?
We're listenable.
So the song is called
Primitive.
Primitive. Yeah. And is there any story behind it, or is it just like a good bass line?
Went to see Slipknot, and then he wrote this the day after that.
Yeah, like we're just sort of like, oh, I'm really inspired to write just a really cool riff. And then I went, oh, well, this turned out pretty mean.
Okay. Primitive.
Primitive, yeah.
There's a party in the studio, and you're all invited.
True.
Wow, that's terrific. Terrific, such an awful word. Why did I come from terrific? I never use the word terrific. I sound like John Campbell. Oh, wonderful, wonderful. That was so polished.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Really, I can see why you came third.
Oh, thank you.
That didn't sound as good as it
sounded. That sounded like a backhanded insult to me.
Hey, it sounded better in my head.
It was pretty awesome.
It was pretty awesome. Right. So now, you were talking, Alexandra, about the fact that you teach people how to...
Yeah,
Because that must be hard on the voice.
Yeah, my main job at UniTech is the voice lecturer. So I also direct some theatre shows and do teach some theory subjects and such, but I'm the full-time voice lecturer on the acting program at UniTech, teaching wonderful people like Rebecca. So, yeah, it's really cool because a number of students who go through the training are in heavy metal bands. Like, there's maybe been 3 or 4 people. And there's been some really interesting conversations about how you do that kind of scream singing without damaging your vocal folds, without hurting yourself.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there's some really fabulous practitioners out in the world who focus on this kind of screaming vocal singing.
Because it must rip you.
Yeah, forward. If you do it wrong. if you do it wrong, you can absolutely destroy your vocal folds and get to the point where you can't speak.
I've had times where I can't, like, speak for a good few days because I've, you know, screamed wrong. Attempting it.
Yeah. So if you, if you're listening out there and you're a heavy metal singer, there's a really beautiful, DVD or, like, YouTube set of clips that you can watch called The Zen of Screaming. So get out there and watch that. It's really so awesome. You know, learn how to do it safely.
You're familiar with that?
Yeah, I went through it once.
Yeah. You got to practice.
Yeah. Are you both vocalists?
No,
we can't sing.
Yeah, you said that when you first arrived in the studio, actually.
Yeah.
You don't think everyone can sing?
We can, but you've got to train your vocals. So, like, I'm trying to get myself to the point where I can do backups for Louis because it'd be cool to have some harmonies, but, like, you've definitely got to do some perch training and you've got to learn how to not strain yourself out. Mm. Even normal singing, like, you could easily strain your vocal chords out.
Yeah, it's good. If you can find a teacher that you really enjoy working with, that's the best way, really. Yeah. Get some guidance and some support, because there are definitely techniques that will make it easier and hurt less.
For sure.
It's also fair. If you're using your voice as a tool, because actors use their voice as tools.
Sure do.
Yes.
Phoebe talks for an hour and a half. The show's an hour and a half. And
is there an intermission?
Nope.
Jeez.
Gosh. It's worth it. It sounds like a long time, but it actually...
Well, so our show's an hour and a half. It goes pretty quickly. Yeah. I'm just... Because we're interesting. I'm just amazed. That takes a lot of power for an actor to hold an audience for 90 minutes.
Absolutely.
Because nowadays, you know, attention spans are... Sorry, what were we talking about?
Attention spans. I don't know.
It's a dad joke. Attention spans are... reducing because of YouTube content, web content.
Mm.
Plays are being written at, you know...
10 minutes.
Plays are being written at 50 to 60 to 70 minutes. 70 minutes is a long play nowadays. Songs have reduced. Songs seem to be going back to being quicker, like 3 or 4 minutes. Yeah. They used to be like 7 or 8 minutes.
There's...
Or Fat Freddy's dropped 4 days and...
Fat Freddy's kind of amazed me because they're so talented that they can keep an audience for an entire 9-minute song.
16 minutes.
And 16 minutes. But like their radio versions are like 8 minutes. Like radio songs usually restricted to about 3 minutes, 30 seconds.
Because
attention spans aren't that long.
I've seen Fat Freddy's 7 times and each time I've seen the same track a few times. And they can go for nearly 20 minutes, but the instrument, I mean, it's just so incredibly, such an incredible strong stage performance.
Mm. Yeah,
it really is. It's almost as long as a play that's on at the basement. Do you listen to other music?
Yes. Yeah, a lot of other stuff.
What other genres do you like?
Well, Matt and I, through the influence of our fathers, shout out to Chris and Dave.
Chris and Dave? That's a good... wasn't there a band called Chris and Dave? Chaz and Dave.
Well, basically, because of the time they grew up, my dad growing up in England and Matt's dad growing up over here, they're both super into a lot of punk and post-punk stuff from the late 70s and early 80s.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good taste, these guys. So what are you into it as well?
Yeah, pretty much like everything from punk to rap to metal nowadays.
Prog.
Yeah, that's pretty... Yeah. It's always fun.
Yeah.
You think about
26-minute Pink Floyd songs.
You
can't beat the Floyd. No. I was listening to The Wall the other night, actually. Mm. Need to get a new copy. It scratched a buggery.
Oh, man.
Vinyl's the only way to go, though, isn't it?
You should see my dad's collection.
His dad's set up.
Yeah. Vinyl is the only way to go. Do you think your parents have influenced your decision to be musicians?
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, Not in the sense that they told us to become musicians, but the fact that they've got us into music from an early age, and that's influenced us to then pick up instruments and start playing.
Yeah, not directly. Like, our parents aren't musicians, but they're big musos. They listen to a lot of music, and my dad made all the, like, back in the early 2000s, he started making the first bootleg live DVDs of punk bands.
Amazing.
So he had, like, the Ramones getting in contact, they bought some off of him because the record label wasn't letting them do it. So then he got in trouble by the Stiff Little Fingers. He told him to stop burning their DVDs.
I mean, awesome. If you got to get into trouble by anyone, you know.
Get an email from Jake Burns saying, stop fucking copying our DVDs.
Sure, no problem. Can you just sign the next email for me? On Trade Me. Signed email from...
Yeah. A signed angry email from Jake Burns.
Pick up a couple of grand on Trade Me, I'm sure.
Surely.
And so you're going into it as a profession, audio engineering, and they're supportive of that?
They're very supportive, because otherwise they probably wouldn't have let me leave school a bit early to do it. But, they're helping me out, and it's cool.
What's the other option? If you weren't going to be an engineer, audio engineer?
Well, I'm trying to branch myself out in as many places as possible. So, like, I might go back and start working at a music shop again. Audio engineering is just useful because then I can help record demos with the band. I can also go out and get work helping friends and stuff get recordings. And
you can run live gigs.
Yeah, I can run live gigs. Although our engineer Ryan, he's pretty much got that sus throughout all of Auckland. He's made a good name for himself, and
so you can ride off the back of him.
Yeah, no, he's doing good on his own. But he's pretty much our promoter now, and he's our engineer, so he's a good helping hand.
Awesome. Shout out to Ryan.
Shout out Ryan. We love you.
We've got Matt.
While we're just doing this, shout out to the Nine Squad because my mate was ringing me angrily trying to give me a shout out. Okay, continue on your merry way. I just want to say that.
Shout out to who?
The Nine Squad. It's a bunch of my mates at school.
The Nine Squad. G'day, guys. Welcome to Kick Arts. You probably don't listen to art shows very often, so welcome. We've got you now. We're currently capturing your details on the internet and we will be sending you spam from tomorrow. No, just kidding. Department of Internal Affairs, I'm just kidding. Your parents supportive, Rebecca, of your choices? You got a background in the arts in your family?
We do now. Like, my parents kind of caught the bug off of me. Like, when I was a child...
It's like a disease.
It is. When I was a child, I was that kid who, like, made my parents watch me do skits in the living room and that kind of thing. And so they were like, oh, we'll put you into drama classes. And then when I was about 15, my dad was like, oh, they're doing Blackadder at the local Amdram. Oh, I'd love to do that. And I was like, would you, Dad? I can help you with your audition if you like. I've been doing this my whole life. And he was like, oh, yeah, go on. And then I helped him. And then now my dad's like a playwright, published playwright, and he does, like, directing all sorts of things. My mum helps costume for TV shows and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
So they're, like, super supportive of...
It's usually the other way around. It's like, oh, my parents got me into this at a young age. I got my parents into this at a young age.
Yeah, it's exactly it. Yeah.
I've never looked back. And I'm very supportive of them.
Yeah.
Of their choices. So you do you have to work full-time and other work? Or are you doing other stuff, other art stuff?
I work pretty much part-time for a naturopath, which is pretty cool. And she's really flexible with me, which is great. So, like, if I need to
take... So she does yoga as well?
Yeah. Okay. And if I need to take, like...
That's a dad joke, sorry.
If I need to take, like, an hour off to go, to an audition or to come to a meeting or something, she's just like, okay, yeah, bye. And I'm like, cool. So I've got it pretty good.
In that holistic way.
Yeah.
But that's what... all artists need, don't they? If you've got a job, you need to have an employer who's going to be sensitive if you need to go off and do something.
Yeah. For sure.
Definitely. And people think, you know, artists are a little bit lazy or a little bit flippant, but actually auditions, you can get a call at 4 o'clock in the afternoon that you've got an audition at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Yep.
And the script's in your email box. You stay up all night learning it and then turn up at the audition, nail it, and then worry about how you tell your employer that you're coming in sick again.
Yeah.
Just till 11:30. And I'll be better.
Yeah. Whereas I'm really lucky that my employer is super, like,
you can
okay
do a do you want to do a shout out to them then?
Hi, Buffy. There we go. She won't be listening.
Buffy the Disease Slayer.
Actually, there is a nickname. I'm not sure it's if she knows about it.
It is retro, isn't it?
Well, if she's not listening, she's not going to find out.
It's true. She's known in the community as Buffy the Vegetable Slayer.
Oh, nice.
And I'm not entirely sure if she knows about it, but she may
she
now.
Does she does now! Yep. That's pretty cool, Buffy. So, yeah, okay. That's good. Yeah. And so you're lucky enough to work to be immersed to work in the arts.
Yeah, I got my dream job.
So how did that start? At school, did you want to be an accountant or a global lawyer?
No. And I, you know, there were moments when I do wish that I was a lawyer, or you know, had one of those a job that was a little steadier in some times of my life. No, I trained as an actor when I was in my early 20s. I'd always wanted to work in the arts and be an actor, and I started doing drama classes as a kid from the age of about 5, and did my first professional show when I was about 12, so I was always had my foot in that. So I trained as an actor in Australia and then started directing a lot of theatre and teaching drama and working as an arts manager and doing, you know, kind of just working in that field. And then I did my master's in voice studies in London.
Ooh.
So that was when I clicked into teaching in drama schools, and so I've been here for 7 years working at Unitech in the drama school here, and yeah, it's my dream job. I get to do pretty much everything that I've always wanted to do. I get to spend all day every day being in theatre and arts with people who love it as much as I do, and I get to direct theatre, which I also love. And this project, my name is Rachel Corrie, is a Unitech supporting our project as a professional development project for me. So I get that lovely kind of dual thing where they actually, you know, they love the fact that I'm connecting with the industry. And of course it's beautiful because so many of the people involved in the show are Unitech graduates as well. Not everybody, but a good number of us. So there's also that
And that continuing
that
PD is so important in the academic world, isn't it?
I mean,
because if you turn up, if you ended up studying at a particular school, and then the tutors haven't actually been working in the industry for 25 years, they're out of touch.
That's right.
They don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
So it's really important, I think, that they're still in touch and doing stuff.
And it's beautiful for me because I get to this wonderful thing of being able to direct these big projects with 26 actors and do, you know, kind of large-scale theatre productions. But I there's no way that I'd, in my teaching here, that I'd be directing a one-woman show like this. So to be able to do this in my time outside of school is really beautiful and precious. Yeah.
Mm. And so a woman producer, woman director, woman cast, woman playwright, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Also, all of our designers are women as well.
Mm. That's so cool. Was that a conscious choice or just how it fell out?
There was a conscious choice about it. I think also because the nature of the play is looking at kind of activism and a young woman as a young activist, and that's so unusual, or that the idea of that's kind of unusual, I guess. So, yeah, we wanted to support and promote women, kind of mana wahine, you know, and to create an environment which gave women the opportunity to stretch their craft and, yeah, so...
Because still there are, you know, there are certain theatre productions and stuff going on around Auckland where it's very male-focused and male-leaning, and a lot of the stuff that was written was that way, so...
Absolutely, yeah. Mm. I mean, there are some lovely men who have been supporting our show, which...
There are lovely men out there.
There most certainly are, and we're very lucky to have a number of lovely men who've supported our show and will continue to do so.
Fantastic.
But, yeah, it's really nice to be able to have this opportunity to really, celebrate the work that women do,
And particularly, I mean, having a strong female influence over the production is important because this was a strong young woman who went over, took a risk, went overseas, and ended up costing her life for it. And I think, I mean, I don't know, I'm a male, so I can't speak from a woman's point of view, but from a male's point of view, definitely the way you'd approach something like that would be quite different, I think.
Perhaps,
you know, from a male point of view, you'd approach it a bit differently. A bulldozer's coming towards you, you'd just run away screaming. So, well, I would.
Yeah.
So I think that took a very brave thing to stand the ground. But, I mean, there have been people through history who have done that, you know, all the way through history, have stood young, strong women who tend to get underestimated in history and forgotten in the history books a little bit. So
I think that's one of the things that's so beautiful about this story and the way that the story is told is it's through the you know, we learn Rachel's story through the little things, you know, through her minute observations about, like, the salmon under her town of Olympia, you know, through meeting various individuals, through kind of, she kind of crystallizes moments. So through this kind of, like, investigation of the microcosm, we can then sort of feel the macrocosm. And I think that's what, just as you say, a lot of women's stories, it's actually the minutiae that are the thing that is profound, that really gets our hearts. You know, it's not this kind of big historical, political, sweeping gestures or kind of politics in that big, heavy way. It's actually talking about, you know, capturing the voice of this one Palestinian academic that she met, or the voice of another fellow activist, the Egyptian soldiers and what they said in that moment. There's this kind of capturing of these tiny, minute details that, when they accumulate, they kind of combust in a way that feels profound, because that's how most of us live our lives, minute detail to minute detail, mm-hmm. you know, what we had for breakfast, who we meet on the bus. But actually, it's that stuff that is the stuff of history. It is the little things that matter when it comes to history. It's not these giant, big, sweeping things that politicians do. It's, you know, did I get to the voting booth? You know what I mean? What stopped me from getting to the voting booth?
Why didn't I vote yesterday? I'm pretty sure there was an election on somewhere.
Right.
That'll come back and bite you if you don't vote. Yeah. Hope you guys are going to vote next election.
Yeah.
You're old enough now to vote, aren't you?
I'm 16.
Are you? I think 16-year-olds should be able to vote.
Yeah, I agree.
I really do. Mm. Because you know what?
Not all of them.
What should the screening process be, Matt?
I don't want my sister voting.
That's more of a personal preference. Yeah. As opposed to a politically motivated one. Well, I think there was discussion about it moving to 16, because by the time they vote and then they leave school, that has an impact on them within quite a recent time.
Definitely.
And if you have no say in your future, that's a whole other radio show, that is, isn't it?
Interesting.
Does it feel difficult in the rehearsal room, the fact that you're dealing with somebody's real words, somebody who passed in a very violent way, that you, the way you deal with that, does it sometimes bring up some difficult moments?
It's just extraordinary, actually. I have to say, she just blows my mind, this young woman. She just, because her writing, actually, you know, it's interesting you talk about being 16, because the early writing in the play is from her journals from when she was about 14, 15, 16, maybe even 12, I think, is the youngest journal entry. And her voice is so vibrant. And so she's so switched on, and she's so honest, and she's so curious. And I just get knocked over by her spirit again and again in the rehearsal room, and brought to tears by it. Just makes it, it's like kind of ringing a chiming a bell or something. It reverberates in the rehearsal room, and it's and it also means that we as artists, there's a duty of care as well around it. There's, you know, we're not just kind of, I mean, there's always a duty of care with a script, like with a playwright's words, you know. I think the words are so important, but for particularly with someone who's real, these were her true words, and this is her her journals, and it's so intimate that it does make me feel really like I need to really ensure that we're caring for her and her story. And there are just moments which just hit the heart, like the, you know, that are so profound.
If she hadn't have died, do you think the play would be written?
I think what would have, I mean what happened, Catherine Viner and Alan Rickman. Catherine Viner is a journalist, and Alan Rickman, as you know, was a wonderful actor. He died recently. What a terrible loss to the world. If you don't know who he is, he was Professor Snape in Harry Potter. Yeah.
And he was Hans Gruber in Die Hard.
Yes, he was.
Greatest Christmas film of all time.
Amazing.
And
yes,
he was so much more than Harry Potter, is all I can say.
Yes.
Alan Rickman was so much more than Harry Potter.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Amazing stage actor, amazing screen actor.
Amazing. Yeah. And what happened was after Rachel's death, when there was this big international outcry and a big court cases and everything, and it started to become known in the world media that Rachel was also this kind of amazing writer, and that's when Catherine Viner and Alan Rickman investigated and got in touch with the family, and the family gave them the big box of her journals, and they went through them and created this script from all of that. It must have been boxes and boxes of material. I've lost a bit of the train of thought that I was...
No, just asked if she'd passed away, whether or not it would have happened.
Oh, right. I think very possibly not in exactly this way, but I do believe that she would have gone on to be an amazing writer, possibly a journalist, possibly a fiction writer. I think she would have been hard hitter.
Isn't that the shame? There's a life that was lost that we'll never know what she could have contributed to the world.
That's right. So, yeah. But the extraordinary thing is that unwittingly, what she has contributed is this extraordinary script, which is done again and again the world over. Mm. It's, I believe, on the school curriculum in the UK, so students study this as a part of their final years of school in their English or drama studies. You know, it's had this incredible impact. Mm. And I think that's, you know, that idea of generating dialogue, that sort of, you know, if we don't notice what's gone on in the past, then of course we're condemned to repeat it. And this play is a gift that just keeps giving and giving and giving.
Yeah. Extraordinary power, funny, passionate, bristling with idealism, and luminously intelligent. Time Out in London.
Yeah.
Wow. And in those tiny theatre spaces, it's going to be quite powerful,
yes.
I imagine. Now, boys, is that your... I managed to find you on Spotify.
Yeah, that's us.
Okay. So we heard Primitive.
Yeah.
What's another Octane?
Nah, Monsters.
Monster.
Yeah.
Monster. They're all kind of... I saw Dead Hands. I was going to say, they're all like one word. Is it like a heavy metal thing? You just have one word?
Nah.
Because you can't think. Oh, he's counting on his fingers.
One of the songs in the EP has six letters. So six words.
Six words.
Six words. One of those six words.
This is why he's not going to become an accountant.
Just needs a bit of practice.
He's still using his fingers. Because it's radio, people won't know that. But
Well, these days you just need a calculator, don't you?
You do. Or actually just ask Auntie Google.
With that last song you played, we'll do a little bit of self-promo. So in December, we recorded a music video for it, and that's coming out in December.
Sweet.
So that was looking pretty epic while we're filming it, so...
Was that for Primitive?
Yeah.
So
it should be pretty epic.
And where will that be? On YouTube or...?
It'll be on YouTube.
Yeah.
And we'll share it around on our Facebook and all that.
And Instagram. Shameless plug.
Yeah, well, we'll do that. We'll be doing shameless plug shortly. And we can link to all those on our Facebook page, because tomorrow, as you know, people, you can download this podcast.
Sweet.
From 5 minutes after the show is on air, and we will link to the shows, the people, and all those things. Every Sunday we do that, so you can go on our Facebook page every Monday and find the interesting content again and link to people's stuff that they're doing. If you didn't get it live right now, we're going to play Monster.
Yeah.
It's got explicit lyrics. It's got the word... Oh, it doesn't matter. just have to
You'll
make
soon
sure.
find out.
You'll soon find out. Any background to the song you want to share?
It was recorded in a shipping container.
That's
EP was recorded in a shipping container out in Henderson.
Yeah.
Wow.
So when everyone was doing their takes and stuff, we would all shoot off to the car. And, you know, so sometimes we were recording to, like, 1 a.m. because we had a couple sessions that just ran through the whole day. So while one person's in there recording, we all leave so it's as silent as possible. And we're all sitting in this car, and, you know, this is, like, the most dodgy industrial area that we have ever been in.
And fights across the street and everything.
And they're, like, you know, there's dudes fighting and then they're staring at us. And, yeah, it was pretty classic.
I wouldn't be wanting to mess with a heavy metal band, though. Just saying. Although
definitely a lot of people will.
I have to say, Matt looks a little
good.
But clean. Is that Albert? Is that Auckland grammar?
Yeah,
it's an Auckland grammar look. That's not so scary. So, just nice. He's a nice boy. Okay, Monster. Who wrote this? You did?
And then...
The Rift?
I wrote, the riffs and stuff.
Yeah, beginning riff, yeah.
And then the is it riff or rift?
Riff.
Riff.
Yeah.
I say rift, eh? Because that's when you've got a split between people, haven't you? I wrote the rift between the band. We're no longer together. That's why one of them left. Because of my rift. Okay. Learn something every day. Now we've just learned that Richard's a dick. Okay, Monster from Silvera off the EP called...
Silvera.
Silvera.
Oh, yeah.
Just so energising. Love it. Just so energising. And how long did that take to lay it down?
Just a few sessions.
Yeah.
Just, yeah. Like one for guitars, one for bass, one for drums, one for vocals.
Is it tiring doing it over and over again? Or do you nail it?
If you're doing a lot of songs in one day, then it can get a bit. Like when you're doing it for like long periods of time in one day, it can get a bit. Not tiresome, but...
Me and our guitarist at the time, Owen, we spent the entire day tracking every song on the EP on guitar. We did it all in one day. So it was a bit of a nightmare. Because you've got to, like, track the guitars multiple times on each side. So you have to get a perfect take, and then you have to reciprocate that at least once or twice with the exact same part, perfectly in sync. So
can you not just play it, like, kind of just layer it again?
Does it work? If you layer it again, it doesn't really work, because the sound gets fatter with the little nuances between the different tracks. So there's little differences in the saturation and, like, slight different timing. So it sort of just builds the sound. But if you take the same track and copy it, it just sounds really digital and shitty.
Sounds like Nicki Minaj.
Wow. Yeah, no.
I'm just saying. Yeah. Yeah. Now, conversation about this amazing play, all women and stuff. Your band's all men? All boys? All boys? Yeah. All men?
All boys, yeah.
There's another band name for you. All boys. Are there many women metal bands?
There's a few. There's not many, but the ones that I have heard of, they tend to be very strong. Yep. In the scene, like, there's this one band I've gotten into recently called Ginger, and their vocalist is just absolutely killing the scene, and she's like, she's got the best scream I have heard from a vocalist in quite a while.
Wow.
And, like, it just sounds like, you know, some massive, like, 7-foot dude screaming, and it's just this little 5-foot tall, like, 5'5" Ukrainian chick, and she sounds incredible.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's, yeah.
It's quite dominated. It's quite a male-dominated genre, though, isn't it? Music, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, you could say that. Yeah.
I did.
You did. This is true facts.
Yeah, this is true facts based on my limited knowledge of the genre. So, I listen to a lot of rock, a lot of punk, and I noticed the crossover when I've been listening to metal. So, what's the difference between heavy metal, heavy rock? Where do you draw the line? Because, I mean, what defines metal over, I think about bands like Deep Purple and, you know, the old classic rock bands like that.
Well, that can be seen as, like, an evolution over time sort of thing. It was like, because a lot of people view a band like Black Sabbath as, like, the first metal band with how they played. But yet, if a band who played like that came out today, they would more sort of be seen as rock. So it kind of, like, evolves over time. It was like, there are certain bands like Deep Purple who have influenced metal bands, but are not necessarily metal bands
themselves. And so, yeah, the reason people considered Black Sabbath metal, and that's how they started, is because they were, like, one of the first bands to come out with real satanic sort of imagery and lyrics. Right. And then it sort of evolved from there. So it sort of evolved from the idea of, you know, being sort of going against dark. The grain and being dark and just having a dark imagery. It's not necessarily that you're satanic. It's just a dark imagery. And
yeah, speaking
like
of which,
it.
I wish you'd put those candles out. That just make me nervous.
The one shaped in a pentagram on the table.
And, and placing them around me is making me feeling a little bit uncomfortable.
Is the goat blood a bit too much?
I thought it was
very probably
blind.
Wasn't a good sign when I painted 666 and blood on the walls when I got them.
I was in Wellington a couple of weeks ago, and I went to a bar and I got a tab number off the bar. You know, they give you a card, and it had 555 on it. And I went up to the bar and I went, "Oh, it's so close." And he looked at me like, "What the?" And he said, "So close." Never mind.
Yeah, that's a good old Slipknot one there. Right?
If you're 555, I'm 666.
Yeah. That's classic.
He didn't get it at all.
But to answer your question, sort of. Nowadays, the difference between, like, hard rock and metal, hard rock sort of, it's just riffs and stuff. A metal band, a way I always manage to identify them is the drums, the guitar, and the bass always tend to lock in, and they tend to be quite technical, quite tight, you know, rhythmic-wise, and they have, like, lots of fast triplets and all sorts of complex shit most of the time.
Yeah.
And it's good fun.
Good fun.
Good fun.
And also, talking about the vocals, that screaming, amazing screaming, singing, which I would have loved to have been able to do when I was younger. I was a big fan of, I've forgotten his name now, because that's what happens when you get old, Linkin Park. Died recently.
Oh, Chester Bennington, yeah.
Just the most incredible. Would you rate his voice? I mean, I rate his voice.
Yeah, quite a versatile voice, yeah.
Yeah, because then, because just singing that style, but then also ballads. Just the most beautiful his cover of Rolling in the Deep, Adele's Rolling in the Deep. Have you heard that?
Yeah.
Yeah, just incredible. Amazing voice.
That's something that quite often happens is people tend to sort of underestimate metal vocalists, and they think that screaming doesn't take talent. But if you
don't do it properly, it completely wrecks your vocals.
Yeah, and you actually quite often see a lot of metal vocalists and stuff nowadays that have had quite a bit of classical training. Mm-hmm. They've been in jazz and all sorts of stuff. Like they're quite versatile. They could do most genres.
It would take some skill, would it, voice teacher?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, and training. Yeah.
I think people do underestimate. Well, people assume it's just kind of smashing guitars and...
And shouting.
Yeah. But it's not shouting, is it? That's quite different.
No. Yeah. Nah. Shouting is definitely more like hardcore punk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Which I also love.
Yeah. Who's your favourite punk band?
Or... There's too many. Anything from like Dead Kennedys to Stiff Little Fingers, just
Angry Emails. Another name for a band, the Angry Emails. The Angry Emoji. The Angry Emoji. There you go, there's a good one. Music. Do you like music?
I love music.
Are you a musical fan?
Yeah, I am. I love all kinds of music. If you try to ask me what kind of genre is my favourite, I wouldn't be able to answer.
What kind of genre is your favourite?
You walked into that one.
I did.
She set me up. I served.
The only thing is, like, I wish I could play a musical instrument, but I'm just not that musically gifted. Like, I love it. No, I know you're going to tell me it's all about practice. I know, but, like, I'm just not patient.
Well, now that you mention it.
It takes patience, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah, I tried to learn the violin. It ended very badly after 5 years. So, yeah. Patience.
Yeah.
It's all you need. You need time. Have you got lots of time with all this stuff you're doing?
No.
Because that's what happens when you work in the arts, isn't it? And you're juggling real jobs and
multiple
part-time
projects.
Jobs
we
and
just
multiple
had a,
projects.
A conversation about the whole get home from work after work to answer some emails for work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Midnight. So oh, better get to those emails.
Yeah.
I know people who work for, you know, in theatre and dance, and they work several different projects at once.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
usual.
Just to keep themselves paying the rent, really.
Yeah.
Or work for the New Zealand Wine Society. That's another thing that people do. You don't have to put your hand up. You've left now.
With learning an instrument, you'll find that most of like the godlike guitarist and instrumentalist, you'll find they're all like the nerdiest people that have so much time on their hands, so they can practice like 8 hours a day.
They're obsessive over it.
Yeah,
not obsessive, like, but like they're so focused on one thing.
Yeah.
Well, it's like a top sports person. It's like anybody. If you spend enough time on it, it's going to pay off, isn't it?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Do you think everyone has talent to play a musical instrument? Do you think everyone?
No one's born with it.
Yeah.
You have to learn it.
It's like things like having a good ear for sound and like a good ear for tone help, but they're not essential.
But they can be learned. It just comes with practice and with listening to enough music and learning enough songs, playing enough, you know, spending enough hours on your instrument. It's just like the only thing you can do to get good.
Do you, from a professional point of voice training point of view, I've heard people say that not everyone can sing. What's your experience of that? Do you think anyone?
No, it's muscles and imagination and practice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what about hearing? Because some people they call people. What is tone deaf? I've heard people talk about being tone deaf.
Yes, it's not really. I mean, it's. If it's a thing, it's super, super rare. I mean, probably the voice teachers out there in New Zealand are collectively saying, no, that's, you know, there's one of those things that people like to argue about.
You know what, there'll be a protest outside here tomorrow morning.
For the most part, you can train yourself. You train yourself and you practice. And I think what I've observed, for the people who think that they can't sing, it's often because they had an experience when they were younger where someone told them that they couldn't sing or that they shouldn't sing, and so they stopped. And so those muscles got, you know, it's just like if you don't walk, your leg muscles lose tone and it becomes harder and harder to walk. Mm. So it's the same, you know, these are just a series of muscles connected to thought, imagination, breath. And when you practice, you get better and more confident. And with confidence comes pleasure. And so you practice more. So, you know, so it becomes, and, you know, I think particularly singing, if you're in a choir or something, you join with your buddies or in a band and you get the community aspect, you know, so it also gives you lots of happy... What's it
hormones.
Called? Hormones. Thank
Endorphins.
You. Endorphins. And so the thing, you just get better and better at it. And so, yeah. I mean, I think some people have been born into households where there's a lot of music around and a lot of singing. And from a very early age, perhaps even from the womb, they've got used to the sound of singing or, people, when they're born, everyone around them is playing instruments, and so it just becomes part of the culture of the family. But it's like anything. Yeah, you practice, you get better.
How do you keep fresh with acting and stuff, Rebecca? So, because if you're not doing it all the time, what does an actor do just to keep their craft alive if they're having to do some soul-destroying job to pay the bills in the meantime?
I go to classes when I can, or, like, I involve myself in some kind of project, whether I'm acting or not. Like, say, with My Name is Rachel Corey, I'm producing, so I still feel like I'm flexing some muscle within my craft. In terms of my acting skills, like, I will quite often, like, sit down in bed and, like, do sight readings to practice for cold auditions, or or I'll just pick a monologue out of my favourite play and I'll learn it and, like, work it myself in my room at night or whatever, just to try and keep it fresh. Yeah, practice. Yeah.
It must be hard to keep interest, though, because I understand, I read a statistic that actors get 1 in 60 auditions in Auckland was the average, which must be soul-destroying.
The way, what I've observed with our graduates is that people make their own work and then you're always working.
Yeah, and that's something that I had always told myself, is that I've got to make my own work, and that's what I've been doing. And I think that's what helps keep my soul alive.
My soul alive. Yeah. It's not like you're a vampire or anything, is it?
No.
Not that we know.
Maybe.
Of. Maybe.
Knows?
Maybe. You will forever be the same age.
That would be nice. Oh, I'd like to stay 25.
Oh, really? Oh, gosh. I'm just thinking about 25. I would have hated 25 is not the age I would have picked.
I don't know any better.
I know Matt doesn't want to be 16 for the rest of his life.
God, no. You'd never be able to get a drink anywhere, would you?
Yeah.
How old are you? 16. I'm sorry, you can't drink. It's been 40 years. Imagine you're 56. How old are you?
I'm 18.
18. No, you're fine. Yeah. You're looking forward to university?
Yeah.
Are you going to get involved with some music groups in university? Is there any plans to do that?
I'll probably just see what there is, yeah, to be honest.
Because there are music clubs, aren't there, that you can get involved with and stuff?
See what's about.
And live gigs, you were going to have a live gig in December, but it's been pulled.
Yeah, venue owners weren't being too good. They weren't getting back to us very well.
Oh, no. That's not good. But you need a really good manager.
Yeah.
Have you got one?
Yeah.
Do we?
Ryan. Ryan's our new...
Yeah, sort of, yeah.
He's become our manager, basically. Actually, yeah. But, no, it wasn't the promoting and managing side. It was the actual venue owner themselves.
Right.
So, yeah. But we should have... We're trying to work on some possible shows over summer, so possibly January. And coming back into February, March, throughout the rest of the year, we'll definitely be trying to get some shows around New Zealand.
So how do people find out about where you're playing? What's your Facebook links and all those sorts of things?
So
Instagram and Tinder.
We just Tinder, just local bands in town. you just post around on Facebook and stuff, you talk to people, you just try and keep your social media active so that people are always finding it. And the more people hear your name, the more they associate that name with being a professional band. So if they hear that band's in town, then they'll be more inclined to go check them out because they've heard their name around quite a bit.
Local bands in town, and they are called Silvera.
Indeed.
Yeah? Is that how to say it right?
Yeah.
Because I said it before and you said it differently.
Silvera.
So. Silvera.
Yeah. My headmaster once pronounced it Silvera.
Silvera?
Yeah.
What did your headmaster think about you being, from Auckland Grammar, think of you being in a heavy metal band?
Not really sure. I just heard it was announced in assembly when we won regionals back in June.
Okay.
We got called Silveria once as well.
Oh, yeah. Silveria.
Yeah. So sounds like something you might catch.
Yeah.
Accidentally.
Oh, no.
Got a special cream for Silveria this coming weekend. Is that the King's Arms? Oh, the King's Arms, no longer there.
No.
That's a bit of a shame. Did you ever get to go to the King's Arms?
Yeah. We didn't personally play as Silveria, but done a couple gigs there and stuff.
Yeah. it's a shame to lose venues like that. They just keep dropping out over Auckland.
Yeah.
We're pretty short of venues for bands, for theatre, that are reachable for young bands. And what, sorry?
And rehearsal venues.
Rehearsal venues? This is what... for band... Does it have to find band rehearsal space? Or do you...
Shout out to D-Base Music Centre.
Oh, yes. They're so good. You just call them up in the three-hour session for $70 every time.
Is there enough room for can theatre actors before?
How many?
It was a one-woman show. I can't do that much.
Well, we're really lucky because it's connected to Unitech, so they've very generously given us our rehearsal space for free. So that is really great. Yes.
Sussed.
You're right, though. Rehearsal space is at a premium.
Mm-hmm.
And it's either too expensive or booked up months in advance.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm.
So it's what can you do?
You have to be wily. Or you do a little show like ours, which you can probably rehearse in a living room if you move the furniture out of the way.
Yeah.
We don't quite get that luxury because if we play at our houses, we'll get noise control call on us in 20 minutes.
Well, can you ever do an acoustic set?
We'd contemplate it if we can practice for that because we're still writing new stuff for Silvera.
Yeah.
So, like, we'll finish all that and then maybe start working on some acoustic stuff.
Nirvana did it really well. That was such a good album.
Yeah.
Kiss did it.
Such a good album. Did they?
Yeah, Kiss did an unplugged set.
Wow. Well, so, my name is Rachel Corrie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Opens at the Garnet Station Tiny Theatre on the 1st of December until the 5th. And then two days later is at the Pump House Theatre from the 7th to the 9th.
Mm. Mm-hmm. We also have a forum. Do you want to speak a little bit about that, Rebecca? You've got the date.
Sure. On the 8th of December at the Pump House, we have a forum with some guest speakers where we can answer some... Well, they'll answer some questions about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and all that not wonderful jazz. And our speakers, we've got like Child Poverty Action Group founder, human rights activist Jennifer Wacken, Margie from Amnesty International, and Gabriella Brain, who's a youth coordinator at Auckland Women's Centre. It's at 3:30 PM at the Pump House on the 8th of December, and that's a free thing. So anyone who comes to our show can come along, or even if you can't make it to the show, but you can make it to the forum, that would be great too.
And so you guys are on Facebook.
We have an event live on Facebook. It's just my name is Rachel Corrie. You can search that. It's pretty easy. Our picture is the beautiful Phoebe in nice orange and yellows. It's pretty colourful. You'll be able to find it pretty easily.
It's very retro.
Yeah, yeah. That was what we were going for.
I like it. I like it. And tickets available from, and how much are they, and how long's the show?
The show's currently running at an hour and a half.
Yep.
Tickets are available from emberscollective.co.nz, which just links to our Facebook page, and there's two ticket links, one there for Garnet Station and one there for the Pump House. And it's $15 concession for students and equity members, and $20 for general admission.
So cheap.
Mm.
It really is.
Yeah. And Garnet Station, by the way, just has the most amazing pizzas and delicious food there.
Yum.
So, you know, if you fancy making an evening of it, you can go and see the play and then get yourself some delicious
coffee. What time does the play start?
7:30 PM.
Mm.
And then on the days when we have matinees, which, the first matinee has fallen out of my brain. It's normally 7:30 PM, and then on the 8th it's... we've got two shows, which is 2 PM and 6 PM, and there's also a 2 PM show and a 6 PM show at Garnet Station as well.
Wow, fantastic. Pizzas.
Pizza and theatre.
Right. Wow. Pizza, theatre and wine.
Oh, wow. You can also get wine at Garnet Station.
Just getting better and better and better. Gosh. Is the French cafe at the Pump House open the evenings you're playing?
I don't know. I'd assume so. I can't see.
There's some great places in Killarney Street, also in Lake Road and that in Tapapuna.
It's so beautiful down there by the lake.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is.
It's gorgeous.
Picnic for the matinee.
It's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good luck, you guys.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
With your projects, with your music, with the play. I'm going to try and get along to see this because I missed it when I was touring last time, and I really, really interests me, the subject. It's been around for a while and it still hasn't been resolved.
Mm-hmm.
So, I actually suggested they might want to get a parent to go and sort out Israel and Palestine, because if you can deal with toddlers, you should be able to deal with Israel and Palestine.
Wow.
to have them to grow up, some of them. So,
difficult, difficult situation.
That is very complex, isn't it? So, yeah. And I'll be interested to go to that talk, actually, to hear what people have to say about it as well.
Yeah, great,
so. Take care, everybody out there this week. If you're working in the arts and you want to come and see us, you know how to get in touch on Facebook or kickarts1@gmail.com. Let us know what you're doing. We don't do arts listings or anything, but we do want to hear about you, your stories, and what you're doing out there in the world of arts in Auckland and beyond. To our guests tonight, thank you so much for sharing your time and your stories with us. And I'll see you all next week. In the meantime, go out this week and kick some arts. Yeah,